Gold Manners the widest with Paperboy, then Smart Deal Al Rocco. As they reach the 300, Liberty State shown her head, and Poifecta's not going away. Poifecta's claimed Liberty State, and the favourite's in trouble. Intrepid Eagle behind them from Hard to Cross and Zamborghini. Poifect kicked away. 100 metres to go. Hard to Cross back on the inside. Poifect three quarters, Hard to Cross. Poifect driven out hands and heels, wins it. Poifect first from a head bobber. Intrepid Eagle or Hard to Cross with Zamborghini in photos.
Poifect.
In came Smart Deal, who's run a race. Behind them, Paper.
Congratulations, TK.
Thank you.
How exciting was that?
It was very exciting. It was great. And she's got a bright future, which is even more exciting.
That's fantastic. So she escapes the dog food processing plant for one more week. What kind of a winning? You don't have to give us specifics, but what kind of a winnings does an owner get out of a win like that? Is it like big celebration time, or is it like, yeah, it's all right, but, you know, we're not going to get that excited? Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, it's all right. Pays the bills for a while.
Right. Tax-free? Yeah.
Well, no, but it's in a company, so...
Right. I guess it's, taxes. It's not gambling, right, when you own a horse, or is it?
No, it's a trust, it's not tax. Well, actually, it is. If I had have owned it in my own name, it would be tax-free.
Right.
But I can't deduct my losses, so I've learned a long time ago, you're better off deducting your losses from running the business and paying trainers and vets and all that kind of stuff and paying tax on your winnings.
Right. Well, congratulations. Yeah. That's very exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, she may head up to Queensland, so you may see me up there if she gets into a good race up there.
Oh, fantastic. This is QAV, by the way, the investing podcast, not the horse racing podcast yet. Although if Tony has his way, it'll probably morph into that at some point. Episode 718, we're recording this on the last day of April, 30th of April, 2024, and with us in the studio is Matt Walker. Welcome to QAV, Matt.
Thank you.
Hey, Matt.
Where are you actually, Matt?
I'm sitting in an office in Box Hill in Melbourne. That's where I work.
Well, Matt, we've talked about you a lot on the show over the last couple of months because you've been doing some great work behind the scenes on this regression testing system, and you kindly volunteered to come on and talk about it a little bit. So first of all, thank you for everything you've been done. You know, Matt just reached out to me out of the blue, I think towards the end of last year, and said, hey, my dad listens to the show and I've been listening to the show and I didn't believe it, so I built a system to test it, and holy hell, it kind of works.
How could you not believe someone who downloaded Seinfeld scripts in the 1990s?
Yeah,
at a Box Hill internet cafe. Right, <yeah. laughs>
Well, I think there's something to be said for the fact that there's so much perhaps bad financial advice out there.
Lots of bad
these days.
Yeah.
That it's nothing against you guys. It's more of just a general skepticism.
Mm.
Against, you know, I think probably obviously you guys resonated with me a lot in the way you guys were talking about things. Probably Tony, you know, like a very long, mature investing career. But even still, I think there's a healthy dose of skepticism in me. I've got an engineering background, so that need to test it definitely came up. But yeah, I think I originally heard you guys talking about doing a bit of regression testing. And at the same time, I was sort of working on something. And that was about the point where I was like, oh, maybe it would be good I reach out. And I think Cam, at least, I know Tony, maybe you've looked at a few bits and pieces, but the feedback you guys are giving back to me has then been really useful to make it even better. So I think that was sort of the turning point on why I reached out in the first place.
Well, I'm glad you did. And, you know, it's been fantastic to work on it, and also inspiring just to see somebody who can code. Like, we've had a few guys code up different things, but you coded yours in Python and sent it to me, and I'd been doing a bit of Python. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, if you can do this in Python, that's amazing. Like, we could probably get something up and running here as a result of this that we can make it work, and we're confident that it's delivering the right result, we might be able to make it available to our subscribers at some point and simplify their lives. But let's talk about the regression testing system and have a bit of a chat about where it's at. And, you know, I'm sure Tony's asked me a lot of questions about where it's at and how it's working and, you know, what the next steps are, that kind of stuff. And you'll be able to answer those better than me. But before we hit you with a barrage of questions, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You said you got an engineering background. What kind of engineering? Civil?
I'm electronics, so it's very software adjacent. So I don't know. The software is usable. It's not definitely too like the most perfect piece of code by any stretch of the imagination. I code out of a necessity, not so much as like perfection sort of thing. So engineering, electronics background, but yeah, a bit of software, which has been useful. I don't know. There's not much to say about myself. I've had, I guess, a mixed career on investing so far. I've invested a few times in the past based probably more on stories or things that have been told to me, which I suppose didn't really make a lot of sense to me in hindsight. So sort of how I ended up a bit more interested in this space. Away from that, electronics engineer, been working for 5-6 years, that sort of thing, in industry.
So not
working in a company doing medical instruments, which is, it's a cool space.
Right. So not a coder by profession, but obviously
no.
Have done some coding.
Yes, pretty much.
And how long did it take you to, you know, before you reached out to me in December when you had a working system, how long had it taken you to put that together?
I reckon I started the earliest, like some of my earlier things are back September, maybe a little bit even before that. And I sort of went through feverish sprints of working out a lot, giving it up on it a bit when it wasn't working and then coming back to it and back and forth. So it started off what should be quite a simple exercise. I think doing something like that in Excel, especially with like the data that's coming out of Stock Doctor, I sort of thought, oh, it won't be that much harder. But proved to be a little bit more tricky than I was expecting, which I don't know. It has been interesting. So, yeah, it's definitely taken quite a bit of time to develop.
Yeah, right. Well, I appreciate it. So you sent me some notes about things you wanted to talk about. You want to start off with those and we'll get into it?
Yeah.
Well, sorry, before we do that, thanks, Matt, for your work. It's amazing. But the overriding question I've got is, what stage is this regression tester at? How do we know it's actually not full of bugs and it's working correctly?
I think that's a really good point.
Well, before we get into the results and what's being tested, let's work out.
Yeah.
Don't want to buy him dinner first.
Is it a moot discussion or not?
Give him flowers? Yeah. Just... Okay.
I think it's a really good question, and it's definitely one that, it can be mentioned beforehand. I think that's part of the reason I'd like probably looking for a bit of help on that as well. So I think, Cam's done some spot checks on day to day, and I've definitely done, hey, look at, essentially in essence, it's generating scorecards week to week historically rather than like as a single once off week. So I have done instances of generating a scorecard from, the regression tester and then comparing that with the results from a current one. And those are really aligned. I think there's a few things in 3-point upturn, uptrend. I think there is a little bit off in certain spots. And then the other one is, I think, historical low PE. There's a slight difference in essentially how it treats negative PEs. Because I think Stock Doctor or other sites report, sometimes they don't report if it's a negative PE, it just reports it as blank.
Right.
So whether or not you're comparing that as well, if you've got a 0.1 PE, is that the lowest, even though there's been negatives? So there's a few little discrepancies. I think mine is treating it, even if it's a 0.1 and there has been negatives, as the lowest because negative PEs are bad. So a 0.1 PE is still good, but there's a few little discrepancies in there like that. Generally, scorecards, I say, are relatively close. The second point is probably survivorship bias. So as you move back in time, it's, to me, harder and harder to get delisted stock data. So the further you go back, you're potentially missing certain shares or certain share performances. Whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's hard to tell. In theory, I think, Cam, you mentioned that In theory, you're probably not looking generally value investing to buy shares that are, you know, just about to go bust. More likely ones that are just about to be acquired, which probably is more likely to be a positive, but it's hard to say without having that data. And I think I've been doing some reworking recently to try and get more delisted stocks into the back side of it, but I still don't think it's perfect. I know there's a data source called the ASX references out to a company called delisted.com or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have all the data for every stock that's ever been, has been. So somewhere on my to-do list is to go through and actually have a look. Hey, you know, back 10, 15 years, what percentage of the stocks do we actually have data on? And is that playing into it? So that one's probably still a big one to check as well. The third sort of thing I was thinking, which I haven't done yet, but I was talking to Cam about before, is potentially looking at the dummy portfolio and light portfolio and running a simulation and seeing if the simulation would agree with all the buys and sells that the dummy portfolio made. Would be like sort of a third way to test. So yeah, we've definitely tested on a scorecard level. I don't think I've tested so much on a longer time period scale. So that might be a next test to run to give better confidence. Probably though, I mean, Cam's mentioned into the past, but the one major caveat with how this thing's running is commodity sales. So currently I haven't coded in any commodity sales. I think purely out of a laziness basis at the start, at some point I did theorize that to some extent that data should be priced into the share, even if it is at a later point. So it's only going to make performance worse, if that makes sense. So, you know, ideally you're going to get a bottom end of the result, not give you like overinflated results. But again, something else to check. Or add potentially in the future.
So we have, I think 4 or 5 years worth of scorecards now. So have you run yours and checked those against ours and got similar results, have you?
Yeah, I haven't done like a bulk run back of checking every single one, but I've done like pull up a scorecard and check like an individual one that's relatively aligned. Mm. And that, it took a bit of work just trying to get those actually tuned up. There's quite a few actual really interesting intricacies when you get into that that you really need to think about. So it's been a really interesting exercise to definitely understand the investment strategy. and I guess probably to back right up to the start, I guess just thank you to you, Tony, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there with similar sentiments, but for sharing like all this knowledge. I feel genuinely a lot more educated because of this podcast. So I really appreciate it. I'm sure there's many people out there.
No, good on you. Thank you. Yeah, but that's what the community's for, though, isn't it? Like, we're going to hopefully benefit from what you're doing so we can fine-tune the checklist. So, yeah.
Yeah, any other specific questions?
No, I don't think so. I think parallel run's probably going to be the best test, and we've got sort of dummy portfolios, and we've got scorecards going back to be able to parallel run those. So that's probably the best test. I think for what you're saying, it's pretty close. There's a few discrepancies, but it's reasonably similar or good enough to be a guide.
Yeah, isn't it that you'd rather be roughly right than precisely
correct.
Wrong?
Yeah, 80-20 rule.
I think probably the one other thing was in previous shows, I think you'd mentioned about ADT not being included. So ADT is included, and it's doing like the rule of like you will only buy shares if the share ADT is 6 times what the purchase price is.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Off the top of my head. So that is actually baked in there. But yeah, it's just the caveats I just mentioned.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Because it's not an option in the GUI that you sent me, but it's built, it's coded in, right? Hard-coded.
It's just hard-baked.
Yeah, okay.
I'd be hesitant to add that as a variable because you might give yourself fake hope. I mean, I guess that's another part of this as well, right? It assumes you can always buy at the market rate. Like there's no looking into market depths of was there a lot of sells on that day? It is looking at like the general volume traded each day. So it's not buying on days where stocks are delisted, but it's definitely not like looking at market depths, knowing what it could or couldn't buy and how that actually impacts the market. It's just a whole other world once you get into that level. So I think generally the rule of six times ADT, I'm just using as the assumption that it has negligible impact on the market.
So, what you're saying, if you want to buy a parcel of shares, it has to be 1/6 of the ADT available.
Wanted to limit the regression test to high ADT stocks, I just make the size of the initial capital outlay $10 million instead of $20,000, right?
Yeah. So you'll notice that if you run it with like, $1 million or like $10,000, it'll be buying different stocks.
Yeah, okay.
The scorecards it has will have like all the stocks, similar to how you guys do, and then it'll only buy from that if it meets. Essentially, I think the only extra criteria at the moment it's checking is ADT. And I think it's already, that scorecard is already vetted down to ones that have a positive sentiment, like 3PTL.
Cool. Are you handling dividends at all, or are you just looking at the capital appreciation?
Yeah, I pretty quickly had to code dividends when I realized everything was just selling off 3-point trend line sells as soon as they paid out dividends, right. 10% stop losses. So I was pretty happy to leave it till later, and then it became a bit of a necessity. So there's a bit of magic in there about how it works, and it makes a few little assumptions. I think it assumes that I've got the dividend payment dates. I think it assumes the dividend doesn't get added to cash for like, I haven't looked at the number in a while. It's something like 2 or 3 months later, it doesn't add the dividend for, and it keeps the value of that added in for 10% stop loss and 3-point trend line calculations for the next I think it's probably closer to 2 months. I tried to work out an average, but I need to run through the code to look at how long that actually is.
Okay. It's a little bit different to how we do it, but it's probably not a big thing because usually the stock goes down on its ex-dividend date, and then you'll get the payment a couple of months later on the dividend payment date.
Yeah. Sorry. From the ex-dividend date, it's adding the dividend value to what you would check a 3PTL against.
Until the payment date.
Or the 10% stop loss. Yep. So like if it's $100 stock and it's paid $10, it'll still count it as $100 worth of value.
Okay.
And Matt, you have a function in there for doing a buy list for the present date, but we don't have data in the system to enable that right yet. How hard is it going to be to take this and turn it into a run a buy list for this week's stocks thing?
So there's not many numbers that need to be resourced week to week. It's probably not far off, but at the moment, it's mostly about your data collection.
Yeah, it's looking at historic data, not current data.
Yeah, so the process for me at the moment to get data takes a bit. So I don't have that as like an online process. It's all stored locally.
Yeah.
Which is probably the key thing that we need to change.
So good. So you've been doing some tests recently. Do you want to talk us through some of the things you've discovered with your own regression tests?
Yeah. So I guess probably first thing is at least one of the runs I did recently is in a fairly similar model to what you've been using, Cam. Was generally about back to 2006 to 2020, end of 2023 run. I'm finding that at least there's a good amount of delisted stocks back in early 2020s, early 2000s, before 2000, there's a big dip out, whether or not it's just all stuff from before the dot-com bubble got wiped or when sort of data sources came online. I'm not quite sure. So, I guess probably all that to say that, as a base run, one portfolio is performing at about 13.3. I think that was with like 100K starting cash. So 13.3% CAGR. Sorry, I was just getting my notes up. One interesting thing is just sort of, maybe I'll share my screen. And I guess you can probably share images afterwards. Is that fine?
Yeah, I'll throw some stuff out. But just just to remind people, when you say the 13.3 CAGR, if those are the same dates that I've been running mine on, the STW CAGR over that time frame was about 2% for memory. So that's the reference point for the 13.3%. That's the benchmark.
Yeah, which, right? I think was really interesting to me because there was such a discrepancy there. And I wanted to try and work out where it actually happened, right? So the graph I've got here is sort of trying to plot CAGR over time, or it's really just the last year's worth of return rates. And I mean, the other sort of idea I wanted to check was, is QAV outperforming the market consistently across time, or is it like beating it at certain points, which like really kills it into like overdrive? I thought this was just quite an interesting graph. Generally is fairly above the market rate across time, with probably a few points, notably sort of around here. So end of 2021 to 2022 seemed to be quite low. Again, maybe this is a 20 stock portfolio, so it could just be one stock taking a dive, really heavily weighted. Definitely interesting to see that it's not just like one period of extreme growth. It seems to be fairly consistently above.
This is really this is a really interesting graph, actually, because it does. So what we're looking at, folks, is a graph that is comparing the S&P ASX 200 to the QAV regression test results. And what's the green one, Matt? QAV 0.28?
The green one is using a score of 0.2.
Oh, okay.
And only having 8 stocks in the portfolio.
Okay.
So 8 stocks is roughly, at least with 100K starting, what I found, like just manually checking, to get enough buyers to actually get some performance going. Otherwise, it was just holding too much in cash because it couldn't buy enough.
Right.
So at the moment, it's still buying like set size parcels to try and get up to a portfolio size.
Mm.
So interestingly, that one did outperform, mostly, again, quite consistently. So I think that what that says to me is that if you can buy higher up on the buy list, do so, which is perhaps a little bit counter to what you've said, Tony, mm-hmm. sometimes that you're happy to buy lower down the list, which is interesting. But again, this is maybe just one test, so grain of salt.
Well, I'd have to grain of salt, but so the CAGR for that situation of 8 stocks and QAV score of cutoff of 0.2 was 15.9%.
Yeah.
Yeah, versus the normal QAV, which was 13 point something.
So it's not substantial difference.
No, that's right. And the question I've got about that is whether that's due to the QAV cutoff or due to having an 8 stock portfolio. Because a concentrated portfolio over the longer term should get a better return. The larger the portfolio, the more it's going to go back towards a market index performance. So that could be both. Could be a bit of beach. I don't know.
But if it is an interesting
point. So it'd be good to, anyway, the way to test it is to have a QAV 0.1 cutoff portfolio of 8 stocks and compare it to a QAV 0.2 cutoff of 8 stocks and see the difference there.
But Matt, I'm interested in looking at this chart. You've got the blue dots are the regression test results using our normal metrics, and the red is the ASX 200, like the STW, I'm assuming. And so if it's returning 2% CAGR over this time frame, as I mentioned before, versus the 13.3% for the regression test. When you look at the dots on the chart, there are times like in 2007, 2010, 2017, 2020, when the QAV portfolio massively outperforms the ASX 200, or significantly in some cases, massively in other cases. But the rest of the time, they seem to be much of a muchness. They're sort of together. But when you see it here, and sometimes it underperforms, like in the last couple of years, which we've experienced that too with our real portfolios, the light portfolios and our super portfolios in particular. But it's interesting to see here when you lay it out visually over time, you can see that it is very spiky. There are sometimes quite, actually outside of the last couple of years, I don't think there are many periods here where the QAV portfolio has underperformed. For a lot of the time, they're sort of hovering around each other, with the blue slightly on top of the red. But then several, you know, one, two, three, four periods I'd count in this, what is it, like a 17-year period, where the QAV portfolio significantly outperformed the index. So it's those four periods of time where most of the outperformance is gathered. Four periods, probably of a year each, give or take, over 17 years, where the outperformance really comes from. Am I reading this right, Tony?
Well, as far as I can tell, yeah, but I guess there's some questions about what we're seeing here. So what does each dot represent on the graph here, Matt?
Yeah, so it's, if you, how the calculation's done is it's saying, so take like a point at 2007, it's saying where is the portfolio at right now compared to where it was a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at like the last year performance,
mm-hmm.
I did think about doing an average over time, but I figured it would get too bogged down by the end of it and wanted to keep something that was looking year to year. How is like the yearly performance doing? So just keep in mind when you're looking at a point here, it's the performance between 2006 to 2007.
So it's a monthly rolling 12-month performance.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, cool. So most of the time, and so the x-axis is, that's the CAGR amount, the yearly CAGR. So for example, if I look at the very first column, the first red dot looks like it's performed at about 0.2, 0.25 CAGR. Is that right?
Yeah.
But then there's a green dot way above it, which is performed at 1.8, 1.9% CAGR. Is that how?
Oh, yeah, up there. Yeah.
Well, that's 6 months
later. So that's the yearly performance for that month. Is that right?
I think it's generating it based, I think each dot is in about a weekly cadence. And it's, yeah, it's performance over the last year relative to that date.
Okay. Because I would have expected to see some like, so the x-axis is in percentage, I think, isn't it? Is that the yearly CAGR from that date? So it's labeled as starting at zero and you go up at 0.3, 0.8, 1.3, 1.8, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But if it's a rolling 12-month CAGR, wouldn't there be like 10% or 20% be the amounts we'd expect to see?
Yeah, sorry. So to clarify, this is a run starting in 2006, and I've only started yearly results from the first year into the simulation. Does that make sense? So there is a simulation that runs 2006 to 2007, and then as soon as it gets to the end of the first year, it starts reporting on the performance. So
yeah, no, I get that. Like, I'm just trying to understand the graph. So I'm just pick a dot, say the first blue dot, for example, which is the QAV performance. Looks like the CAGR, the way I read this, is it's about 0.5. Is that,
yep.
That's 0.5%, yep. Or is it 50%?
Oh, sorry, 50%. Sorry. I do all my CAGRs in point forms.
So okay.
One would be 100%. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is like extreme outperformance.
Yeah, right.
100%. This is,
yeah, wow. Like
below zero is.
Okay.
Sorry, my bad.
No, that's all right. I'm understanding it better. Yeah. So what we're seeing in this graph is a red line which continues to sort of go forward in the band of probably capping out at about 0.3, so a 30% rise in some years and about a similar sort of drop in some, but probably around a 20% drawdown for the ASX. The blue dots, which is the QAV normal current process, is oftentimes tracking the ASX, but in some years massively outperforming, and then using a QAV of 0.2 is outperforming that. Is how I'm reading this.
With an eight-stock, yep, portfolio.
Yeah, it's a good summary.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I tell you, the big takeaway for me for this is how powerful graphing the comparisons, well, tracking the comparisons, you know, week to week, or even if it was just month to month over a long period is, and then graphing those just to see where QAV. I mean, I know we've done yours, Tony, over whatever, 20 years, side by side, but mm-hmm. sort of making it a little bit more granular and graphing it out like this is really interesting and really telling. And, you know, I remember we've seen the same things with yours. Like, there's been a couple of periods over the time where it massively outperforms, and the rest of the time you're just hanging in there waiting for one of those cycles to come around again, right?
Yeah, because you just can't predict when they're going to come.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
It's kind of a retrospective thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I think that's something I'm definitely still coming to terms with. So I definitely don't come from a finance background myself. So still a lot I'm learning. But yeah, I guess I probably what did pull these up to sort of think like, you know, is there anything we can infer from different periods in time? Like, I know we've talked, or you guys have talked in the past about like value cycles or growth cycles. Yeah, but I guess it's just, you can't time the market or predict the market. So you just have to go along for the ride.
And that's the end of the free episode of QAV for this week. If you're a new listener, I just should let you know how this works. So we have a free episode every week, runs for about half an hour. We have a premium episode also every week. It goes for another 30 to 60 minutes, depending on how many questions we get. It's where Tony answers questions from our club members. If you want to check out the premium episodes and all the other benefits of being a QAV club member, which is access to the checklist and the Bible and the private Facebook groups and the other comms channels that we have, invites to the dinners, Zoom calls, etc., etc., just sign up for the 2-week free trial and check it all that stuff out. You can do that at qavpodcast.com.au. Look for the free trial button there. And if you like the idea of value investing QAV style, but don't feel like you have the time or resources to learn how to do QAV for yourself, think about signing up for QAV Lite. That's our relatively new service where we send you the stock tips every week. And then we also monitor those stocks in a portfolio. And if they become a sell, we email our QAV Lite members and tell them that it's time to sell that stock and what to replace it with. Check that out too. It's sort of a low effort way of doing QAV. Still better if you know how to do it yourself, I think, because Tony could get hit by a bus and then where are you? But while he's not, we can do this. So check that out, qavpodcast.com.au/Lite, LIGHT. If you don't want to sign up to any of those, just keep listening to the free episode. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email. You'll find that on our website too. All right. Have a great week and good luck with your investing. The QAV podcast is a production of Spacecraft Publishing Proprietary Limited, authorised representative of AFSL 520442, AFS representative number 001292718. Please don't make any investment decisions based solely on listening to this podcast. This is presented as general advice only, not personal financial advice. We don't know your personal financial circumstances. Please see a financial planner before making any investing decisions.